Good evening, everyone. It's a blessing to be able to worship God with you all. I'm honored to be able to present this today. Before I do so, I did want to draw our attention. Moving here has been a major blessing in so many different ways, and I could go down the list, and I will at some point over the next infinite years, I pray. But one that's just really struck me, obviously, today, but then many other days, is that it's really such a cool thing to see God bless you with them. There's few preachers who are as well-equipped with the historical and literal side of Scripture, the relevant side of it, as well as the like honoring of God's like inspiration and truth and how those three converge. And I just really think we're a very blessed congregation. Today's lesson was one for the books, and I appreciate you, man. It's an honor to be here. It's an honor to present God's word. And sometimes whenever I preach, I really lean into the youth minister side of things, and today you get that. You get youth minister Andrew today. And what we're going to talk about is something that I'm passionate about, but I'm passionate about it because of, I would have a passion for it in spite of these things, but because of the blessings that God has given me. I've been really passionate for knocking on 7 years of marriage, adding to that about 9 years of knowing my wife. But Crystal's, you know, expertise, study, scholarship, and practice has been mental health. And that's something that I've benefited of tremendously in my ministry since I've known her. And so today's passion is going to be kind of something that I've been able to glean and learn from her. And I wanted to talk about it for a moment because sometimes whenever you think about mental health and its place in society, its place in our lives, I don't think I sent the notes on time. My apologies. So we're going to just go along with this. But one of the things I think is really important with this is that there's kind of two far spectrum issues that come upon whenever you think about mental health, the crisis of it in our community, and honestly, just kind of the like where we struggle with it, I suppose. On one side, you have maybe the luxury of going over generalization here, I would say up until recently, you know, socially speaking, it's been something you just push aside. It's something you undermine, something you minimize. In a Christian environment, it might just be something that you say, hey, pray more about it, and you kind of just work on your own issues and your own feelings and your own mental health, and you just kind of push it aside and again, minimize it. But then on the other spectrum, even if our society, our culture, our previous church cultures even have done that, the other side, you have this issue, which is like individually practiced, dare I say, we almost make our feelings, our emotions a god. Because then like we might, as a group, collectively say it's no biggie, get over yourself, move on, get over it. In practice, it's like, well, as soon as I feel something, I act out. As soon as I'm struggling with something, I respond in that way. And so we have these two conflicting far ends of the spectrum that like, I don't know, don't bless us as a culture, don't bless us individually. And so how can you grapple and find a nice medium, meet in the middle sort of way? And I wanted to start off by reading three texts, if you wouldn't mind joining me. The first one is going to be John chapter 11. I think most of us would know this text. I don't think any of these verses we're going to look to are going to be really shocking to us or surprising to us. But I just want us to consider, how does the greatest man that ever lived, how does he deal with his emotions? Or did he feel? And how did he respond to such? So John chapter 11, verse 32. Again, this is going to have one of the shortest verses, and I think that's one we'll be really leaning into the most. John 11, 32, it says, "Now when Mary came to Jesus, to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother, Lazarus, would not have died.' When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, 'Where have you laid him?' They said to him, 'Lord, come and see.' Jesus wept." Jesus experienced sadness and grief. Continuing on. "So the Jews said, 'See how he loved him.' But some of them said, 'Could not he who opens the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?'" And I'm sure that this text is a lot more in the context that we could deal with. But right now, let's just observe the fact that Jesus, the greatest man, God incarnate, was a man who felt deeply with emotions and with grief and experienced them in some form or fashion. I think we can all agree with that. Let's continue on to Matthew 21. Matthew 21, if you turn over there, Matthew 21, we're going to start in verse 12 through 13. Matthew 21, 12 through 13. Again, this is a very important and significant and spiritually significant text. But in this, we also know this. And Jesus entered the temple and drove out all who sold and bought in the temples. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold pigeons. He said to them, "It is written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer, but you make it a den of robbers.'" And again, we know this text, but I think it's fair to say whether like this was an outburst or this was a planned and calculated move on Jesus's part, Jesus demonstrates human as well as divine wrath, anger, judgment. And again, our Savior, our King, our God incarnate experienced very important and significant and heavy emotions. Some of the emotions we would even claim as semi-negative, if you will. Let's go over to one more that I think is helpful for us to kind of put a cap on some of these thoughts here. But in Matthew 26, go over just a few chapters. This is a passage I come to a lot whenever I'm talking with the kids and just seeing Jesus in a very vulnerable and raw state. I think that this is incredible. Matthew 26, 36 through 41, it reads, "Then Jesus went with them to the place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, 'Sit here while I go over there and pray.' And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful, and he began to be troubled." Continue on. "Then he said to them, 'My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me.' And going a little further, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, 'My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will.' And he came to his disciples and found them sleeping, and he says to them, 'So could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter temptation. The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak.'" And he goes on to do the same thing again. I just want to bring up another passage here. We don't have to go there, but Luke 22, verse 44, in a similar passage, it says, "And being in agony, he," Jesus, "prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground." And all these passages show us that Jesus, God incarnate, was a man who experienced deep emotion, deep grief, deep fear, to the point that his body had some sort of emotional, natural response that caused his sweat to bleed on top of it. So if we're just talking about emotions, just on the fact of like experiencing emotions, grappling with emotions, dealing with heavy, significant feelings, emotions, in crisis of a mental state, it's fair to say that if Jesus dealt with it in this heavy of a place, then we mere mortals can't help but deal with it as well. In fact, we could spend a little bit of time, but for the sake of time, we'll narrow it, but these emotions reflect God and what these emotions and what these feelings came from. But I think it's fair to say that a lot of them are present: fear, anger, sadness, and other big experiences are all there because sin exists in this world. And we have to deal with it on a daily basis, both in our life, others' lives, and the consequences of this world that we live in. So it's fair to say health, mental health, anxiety, anger, depression, all these things aren't exactly these taboo things I would hope in our society anymore. But yet, what do we do and how do we experience and how do we work through them? And I wanted to just share something that I think is a good template, something that I've used. Again, both I've used the experience of my wife and her years in the field. I've experienced a handful of books, about 5 to 7 books that I've read through. And this one specific book I would encourage you to write down. Let me make sure I got it right. It's called Untangling Emotions by Groves and Smith. You can just write down their last names. I bet you could find them. Untangling Emotions by Groves and Smith. They're Christian-leaning doctors and therapists in the field, and it was a very helpful book. And they have a template that I think is very helpful that I share with kids. But what I wanted to share is because I feel like everyone of us in this room has dealt with grief, has dealt with pain, has dealt with anger, has perhaps dealt with anxiety or fear in some regard. And if nothing else, we know people who are dealing with it and fighting through it each day. So hopefully what I can do is just share and embark or give to you some things that I think are fairly helpful that are really, really simple, if I'm being honest with you. So if you're talking about the frustrations of grief, if you're talking about the frustrations of anger, losing your cool quite often, if you're talking about the challenges of anxiety and fear and just grappling with these big feelings within your life, this is a helpful template. It's not meant to be an alternative for health, for a crisis, for medicinal needs, but it's a good place to start to help us grow as a group that understands that emotions come from God, and we need assistance, and we need to allow our emotions to form us more in the image of God rather than our fallen world. So first off, if you're struggling, if you are quick to anger, if you are quick to fear, if you are quick to sorrow, if you are just a ball of emotions and you don't exactly know what you're doing, here's what I would encourage you to do. First off, identify what you're feeling. That is sometimes a harder problem or a harder objective than it sounds like, because sometimes we feel anxious and we don't know why. Sometimes we feel fearful and we don't know why. Sometimes our hearts are racing and we don't know why. And so if nothing else, it is just good to pause and to simply ask yourself explicitly, what am I feeling in this moment? It sounds simple, but it's very helpful foundational start. What am I feeling in this emotion, in this moment? What emotions are you experiencing them? Name them, identify them, write it down, you get it. Pretty simple, but it does a lot of good to be able to simply pause and say, what am I feeling in this moment? And this is something that we've added to Groves and Smith's list, but something Crystal and I have really taken to, and I've taken from her own work in the field, is to also from there, kind of as a sub point, is to have a 2-minute diversion. To just know like, hey, like just take a pause. You know what you're feeling, but sometimes you can't handle it right now. So it's especially good with kids. It's especially good with teens, but like, you know, let's use guys as a good example. It's kind of like the example of, you know what, sometimes you know your boy's really heated and frustrated and needs to have a big conversation, but sometimes it's just good for him to go play basketball for 10 minutes and get his heart racing. And like, God made men and women to like need to like work through some of their frustrations and pain. And what I've come to find from being married to Crystal is like, we never outgrow that. Sometimes you just need to pause and breathe. Sometimes you just need to like go do a puzzle. Sometimes you just need to go run. Sometimes you need to go try not to punch a wall, but you know, like if you have to punch something, I suppose, make sure it doesn't have a heartbeat. Just like you need to go and you have to go do something. And these are helpful coping mechanisms that can help you work through your emotions. But you got to do it early on. And honestly, here's another thing. It can't be screen related. Like, I'm not exactly like a never have screens in your house. I like movies, but like screens are just ways, especially for boys, to distract themselves from their pain. That's never a good coping mechanism. Always go to something that's physical. Always go to something that's mentally stimulating, something that helps you breathe and calm down, okay? So first off, identify. If you want to put down the 2-minute diversion, that's helpful. But secondly, examine. Examine the emotions you're feeling. Examine and ask yourself, why are you feeling the way you feel? It's pretty simple. It's pretty silly, but it's helpful. Here's a quote from the book. Your emotions are always telling you something about what you are valuing, what you are caring about, or what you choose to love. What are they telling you? Why are you anxious about this situation? Why are you so angry in this moment? Why are you so clouded by fear? Examine it. Try to figure out why you're feeling the way you are. They are always pressing you towards some kind of action. What are they urging you to do? They are always influencing something within your relationship with God. What is their effect on your worship with Him right now? What are you feeling? Why are you reacting to it? Why is this hitting so hard? And why can't you shake it? Just evaluate it. You're not judging the moment. You're not criticizing yourself. You're just trying to get to the heart of like, man, I'm very anxious right now. I'm very angry right now. Very disappointed right now. Part of maturing in emotions is being willing to pause and reflect and to evaluate these things. So start off with that. Examine why you're feeling the way you are. But thirdly, our third step, evaluate. This is the next logical step. Once you have confronted the why, now you must confront the value of it. Is this feeling, this emotion, this impulse, this push to go respond based off these emotions, is it justified in your life? Is it justified as a person who's striving to have a life that's full of self-respect, success, and that values God and is an image and is an image bearer for him? Evaluate the way you're feeling. What is super important about our emotions is that they reveal to us what we love. You wouldn't be nervous, angry, or joyous for something you didn't care about. But with that, we need to realize you and your emotions can be tainted with human failure, with your past natural tendencies. It is okay to be upset about what God is upset about. It is okay to be angry with what God is angry for. But this is an important, critical, maturing step that causes me to say, I am angry, I am sad, I am jealous in this moment. And is it really a place, now that I've paused, now that I've thought about it, now that I've identified it, now that I've examined it, to just be honest with yourself? And it's going to require honesty if you want to be a successful, maturing God follower. Does this have a place here? If you're willing to answer that, that's a pretty critical step towards spiritual as well as mental maturity. Does it have a place here for you? Ignoring this question will not help you grow, will not help you develop, will not help you work through the hardest times of your life. Sometimes your emotional wires just feel anxiety for no logical reason, and it's worthwhile to take a pause and to identify that. Not to say that that's the end of the matter. Maybe you do need to seek further guidance, but just to understand, I am fearful for no reason at all. That's important cognitive information for you. But fourthly, and this is pretty simple, pretty obvious, you act on the information you have identified within yourself. Sometimes it's just important to just be like, hey, I've gained information. I've been willing to pause. I've been willing to be critical of myself. I've been willing to be gracious to myself. And now I have the information before me. This is where the boys become men, the goats become sheep. This is where I choose to grow and to develop further. What am I going to act on based off the information I've processed within myself? On one hand, we want to embrace and nurture the loves of our heart and the behaviors that are good. And on the other, we want to resist and even starve loves and action that are damaging to our hearts, our bodies, our relationships, and our souls. It is good and healthy to evaluate your emotions as, you know, taking 2 Corinthians 10:5 out of the way, we take every thought captive. Because by doing that, you evaluate what you love and hold dear in your life. And all of this, our emotions, if nothing else, teaches us what we love the most. But we have the power to choose a love that is based off of actions. Sometimes our impulse it reveals to us that we have some maturing to go, and we have some transforming in the image of God that we have to go. But we can still, in this moment, show and demonstrate to ourselves and to our God what we choose to love. And so therefore, act upon the decisions you have come to. Am I going to respond in jealousy and anger and fear? Or am I going to choose to walk in a way that is sober-minded, rational, and cognitively mature? You have the power to choose what you love and evaluate and dictate your decisions towards that frame of mind if you act upon the information that you have been able to rationally think of in the moment. And there's one more step I have for you before we're done here today. Lastly, fifthly, engage with God. Because if your emotions are God-given and are a reflection of the God who gave them to you and instilled them within you, both fear, both anger, both sadness, then it's important to understand that, yes, my emotions are often a product of my fallen nature and my fallen decisions, but they still show me a good God who is gracious and understanding and who is working with me where I am. So choose to engage with God. Psalm 62, verse 8 says, "Trust in him at all times. O people, pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us." And it's very important to understand this. God gave you emotions to connect you, bind you, and draw you to him. Again, that last part was a quotation. And I want to end with this. I want to end with a couple thoughts here real quick. We can't segment our lives into pieces and call one of those pieces worship. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't love people or things other than God, but our love for God should shape all of our other loves or commitments. If we are loving something else more than God, letting it call the shots and guide our lives, it is functioning like God to us. But whether our greatest love is God or something else, it is essentially what is driving us, and so the true object of our worship. Here then is what this means. Every emotion you feel reflects your loves or reflects what you worship. So choose to give and surrender your emotions, your feelings, to a God who gave them to you. And understand that your feelings reflect your God, but are not your God. Your feelings, what you're suffering through, what you're worrying about, what you're angry about, may reflect your God, but it's up to you as a mature person to hand them over to him and say they belong to you. I think the best example is one text we've already read. Jesus in the garden, as he sat there and he prayed through his grief, through his troubled spirit, through his sorrow. Again, and I think there's different interpretations as to why Jesus prayed this, but he said, may this cup be taken from me. And again, I've read some people recently who've said that maybe it's not really him saying, don't put me on the cross. I don't know. I haven't done enough research on that. Regardless, it's still clear to see that he's suffering through something. He's physically and emotionally suffering through these really heavy feelings. And yet he still says this, not my will, but your will. At the end of the day, that is the template, that's the gold standard of what it means to live in this world, to suffer and to feel and to struggle and to grapple with how I feel each day, is that sorrow comes from a good God, but my circumstances can allow me to choose my God or to choose me. And Jesus says, in the most important, significant, emotional, and heavy time of my life, no matter how I feel, I choose you every time. And because of that, it's the template of what humans ought to deal with when suffering, when struggling, with feeling. So hopefully this is something that's been, in its simple way, helpful for you, something that you can share with loved ones. But whatever it is, I thank you for the opportunity to share this thought with you all. I pray that we work together in growing as individuals who take seriously, the emotions and the broken nature of our world, but also never allow how we feel to be the guiding force of our life, because we stand for a good God who has given us every blessing we have. And if you do not have that relationship with him yourself, if you are realizing within yourself that your broken nature, your broken emotions, your struggles right now are too much to carry yourself and you need some additional help, I know our elders would be happy to talk to you, pray with you, and to show you through scripture, through experience, how God is the answer in every occasion. But if there's any need you have, please come forward together as we stand and together as we sing.